along. There'll be no more sobbing when he starts rubbing his own sweet song. Wake up, you sleepyhead. Get up, get up, get out of bed. Cheer up, cheer up.
The Red Robin Podcast is powered by Budget Tyres Auto Centre, the only car specialist trusted by supporters, players and club officials. Head down to Leeds Road and check them out for all your motoring needs. Welcome to the Red Robin Podcast Weekly. Joining me this week are podcast regulars Steve Till and Scott Solway as we take a look back at the Robins' playoff securing victory over Salford. We will look forward to Rovers' encounter with already relegated Wakefield Trinity, and we take a look at the winners from the end of season play of the award ceremony. Scott, Steve, great to have you. Thanks to the guys who join us live. It's an early morning recording, a little bit different this time. Thanks to everyone who's also listening on podcast as well. Scott, Hull Kingston Rovers 12, Salford 0, 6-0 at half time. It was a game where the Robins defence was on top.
Won us the game, the defence. I think we were a bit clunky with ball in hand. I think I think Willie Peters mentioned that we weren't great with ball in hand. It was a little bit off. So when we did make an error, we backed it up defensively. And I thought we were absolutely outstanding. It's the old cliche, defence wins games, doesn't it? And it certainly proved that on Friday night. I thought defensively, we never gave Salford a sniff. I think they had 18, 20 odd tackles in our 20. And they never really looked like scoring defensively. If you're going to get your defence right, it's at this part of the season. So, yeah, defence won us the game on Friday.
Yeah, Steve, there seems to have been building all season to this type of performance. It was what Willie Peters wanted to instil in the side, wasn't it? I mean, it's the fourth time that we've nilled a side this season, and what a time to do it as well, because there was a bit of pressure going into the game on the Robins, weren't they, to secure that playoff spot. We didn't really want to go into that last game of the season needing to win to get the playoff spot, and the players responded really well to that challenge.
Yeah, we strangled them, didn't we? I must admit, nerves grew leading up to the game. I thought, this is a strong Salford team, and forget the fact that they supposedly had illness in the camp. I don't know whether they were playing around their nine games, but I don't know, they did cancel their late dinner, post-season dinner. So, but we strangled them, and like you say, Willie Peters has built towards this. Now, after this weekend, we're going into a new season for me, you know. So we've got to get it right this weekend as well. But against Salford, I thought we were magnificent. We could have been 12-0 up, by the way, because Brad Schneider spilling that ball. By half time, all the nerves had dispelled, and I thought we were going to be comfortable. I thought we might go further in the second half, but we're playing Salford. Salford were desperate to get in the six as well. You know, there's no lie downs nowadays, unless you're with another team. But you know, there should be no lie downs nowadays anyway. And when you're aiming for the top six, and I've got to say, beginning after the Wembley, I said we'd win five matches on the trot at St Helens, and this is the fifth match coming up. So, you know, I'm pleased with that, and I've backed Rovers for the grand final, to be honest.
Well, Scott, those couple of changes to the lineup on Saturday. One maybe a surprise, one maybe not so much. Jed Litton and Matty Staunton omitted from the squad. You'd have been hard pressed to find anyone who would have predicted Jez Litton not being involved. Matty Staunton maybe more understandably so, with Jesse Sewell returning to fitness. Interesting, if you read Willie Peters' post-match press conference, what he did, where he's basically rotating players to make sure that Jesse Sue, Jordan Abdul get game time heading into the playoffs. And it's a funny game to do squad rotation, but ultimately it paid off for the Robins.
I think we said last week on the podcast, I think somebody had posted in saying they'd give Jez Litton a week off.
Yeah, we left him off the podcast.
We laughed him off. We said, ask Jez Litton if he wants a week off. And then all of a sudden, Jez Litton's got a week off.
Yeah, I'm going to get him to do the lottery numbers for me this week, I think.
Yeah, it was a funny one for me. I mean, it worked. It paid off in the end. We know Matt Parcell can do 80 minutes anyway, and I'm sure Jez can do 80 minutes if he ever wanted to rest Matt Parcell for a week, but he's always gone with Parcell and Litton, one off the bench, one starting all season. So to suddenly change. I think he went with a bigger pack, didn't he, against that Salford big pack as well. With Jesse Sue back, as you say, he's got to get some minutes into his legs. Jordan Abdul the same. Certainly coming into the back end of the season when the playoffs start, you want all your key players running on 100% if you can. It was just a funny one for me, but it worked. And I'm sure Willie spoke to Jez and gave him his reasons, et cetera, et cetera. Who knows, maybe on Friday we might see 80 minutes from Jez Litton and Matt Parcell gets rested. I don't know. But it seems to be rotation is a big thing now these days. And that's what happened. That's what you've got a squad for at the end of the day, isn't it? The reason you've got a squad is to rotate and give players game time. And if you want to take a player out the firing line for a game, luckily at the present moment in time, he's got the ability to do so, as Willie Peters. I felt a bit sorry for Matty Stoughton dropping to 18th man, but you can only name 17 players at the end of the day. And Willie thought that was the best 17 that he had to take on Salford, and it clearly proved right.
Yeah, and Steve, I mean, Scott said we went with a strong middle. You look at the bench, Luckley, Sue, Kennedy. That included Hadley starting at prop. You had Minchell, obviously, loose forward, and Batchelor and Lynette in the second row. So they did go to try and monster Salford in the end, didn't they? And I suppose with Aaron Abdul, he came on as loose forward, and he does give you that ball-playing ability as well in the middle. So it's going to be interesting to see what we do against Wakefield, but I think you've got to almost box that Wakefield game off. In the context of the season, now that there's nothing riding on it. But the Robins was strong, and ultimately, like you said, Steve, we strangled them, and I think a lot of that was down to our middle domination.
Yeah, by the way, there is something on this game that we need a bucket full of points to get fourth spot, to get that playoff place at home, and I think we can do it. I think the fact that Lee are playing Wigan won't let up. And Wigan have scored 70-odd points against them so far this season. And if we can get a 20-point victory, let's say we can get a 20-point victory, I think we're halfway there to getting that fourth spot. And while I don't think it's vital, because I think we'd beat Lee anyway, it would be good to have it at home, wouldn't it? Another send-off for the lads. Yeah, I mean, as I said about the Salford game, can I just go back to Jez Litton? I watched the playback and they actually interviewed Jez Litton halfway through the game, and he didn't show any signs of being upset at not playing. You know, he was positive about the team. And, you know, so like you say, he might rest Parcell this week. But we can't argue with what Willie Peters has done. He prepared as well for the Salford game. And like I say, in itself, it was like a playoff game because Salford were desperate to get that sixth spot. And I don't think they can do it now. But they contributed to the downfall a bit with that King, I can't pronounce his name, getting sin-binned. I mean, he was absolutely stupid with the way he was performing. And that helped us along the way. But I think we'd have won anyway. I was kind of screaming for a drop goal when we were 6-0 up, just to put that distance between us and them. But we got the penalty, and then we got a fantastic try from Rhino. Can I just say the first try was outstanding? The first try that we scored was the passing, the movement, everything about it was first class. And I'd have had that as the try of the day. Others might disagree, but it was outstanding.
Yeah, and Schneider, Scott, Schneider, man, he played such a pivotal role in that first try. He should have had a try already. I mean, or Sean Kennedy-Dowell should have had a try. I mean, I don't know why. I think he could have easily bulldozed his way through and got over the line, but that's probably the mark of the man. where he's the ultimate team player, and he wanted to put it on a plate for Schneider. And I think it almost came as a surprise to Schneider, because 9 times out of 100, he strolls in for a try. It didn't happen on that occasion, but he made up for it, didn't he, with the pivotal role he played in Batchelor's try.
It was a fantastic, the way he just shoved the ball, then he went around the gap and then threw the ball inside to Tom, and then he drew the full back and he gave it inside to Batch. It was just a great team try, wasn't it? Fantastic try. We got over their line 2 or 3 times, passed on in the second half, nearly grounded the ball as well. You know, it could have been a much higher score than the 12-0 suggests, and we were probably better than the 12-0 suggests as well, if we're being honest, you know. As I said, I've said all over social media, to win 12-0 is better than 24-12, because it suggests that defensively, which we were absolutely fantastic, but we could have easily scored 24-30 points with a little bit more composure. Certainly Schneider, when he spilled, I mean, I don't know why Skids didn't go on his own. I don't know. He'd have got there surely with his size. And as you say, I think it was the shot from Schneider. I don't think Schneider expected the pass. You probably argue that a rugby player should always expect a pass if they're on the pitch, but I think Skids could have gone on his own there. As I say, Parcells' second half, when he nearly got the ball down, Mikey Lewis in the corner nearly got there as well. So we're a far superior team. We could have won the game by 24-30 points with a bit more composure, but Schneider has been, I think, absolutely outstanding for us in the short time he's been here. He's been fabulous for us. He's come in, he's adapted to the ethos of the club, and he's become a fan's favourite just in the 7-8 games he's played, hasn't he?
Yeah, his contribution's telling, isn't it, Steve? I mean, we talked about it on last week's podcast about Schneider and his impact at Huddersfield, and throughout his time at the club, he has been the most almost perfect loan signing so far, in that he's come and actually added something for the side. And you know, whatever happens come the end of the season, he'll be a player who's remembered fondly for a long time, I reckon.
Yeah, I go back to the semi-final against Wigan and our first try. Schneider took the line up for our first try. And I thought, if he does that for the rest of the season, that'll do me, because he creates problems for the opposition when he takes the line up. And he's done it ever since.
He seems to be getting more comfortable, don't you think, Steve, with the ball in hand? I think when he first came, he was maybe a bit rigid, and he was a bit sticking to his position almost. Now he seems to have a little bit more freedom, and you know, we seem to be benefiting from that, definitely.
Massively. It's not often you get a kind of mid-season on loan player from Australia that doesn't let you down, and he's not let us down.
Yeah.
I can think of the Nosy Neighbours last year. They signed one, didn't they? And he wasn't cited. So, yeah, I mean, and he's benefiting, and he knows how much he's benefiting. And when he goes back to Australia, that the benefit will show. And even if he doesn't get in the Panthers, you know, 30 in the next couple of seasons, even if he's playing in the feeder leagues, if there's a chance we could get him back, he'd be that much better of a player as well. So, outstanding, and an outstanding man. He, you know, everything about him, when you talk to him, when you see him, the way he behaves, he's a full professional. And, you know, he's joined the club, as it were, because we're the OKR at the moment are probably one of the most professionally run clubs there is.
Yeah, and, you know, we'll see if it ever pays off in the future, I suppose. We'll never know. But if Schneider, of course, has a positive experience, he goes back to NRL. If there's ever any of his teammates who Rovers come in for, and Schneider's the one in the ear saying, you know, you want to get over there, you'll have a great time. You know, that could be the difference in time. So, yeah, let's hope there's plenty more from him to come. Little interesting spell, Scott, just before half-time, Kennedy came on. I think we started to struggle a little bit in the middle. Willie Peters moves Minchella to prop, brings Abdul on. And it shows that we've got that versatility, and we've got that ability and that dynamicism, to be able to move people about in the game at the right times. And I suppose having someone like Abdul on the bench gives you that ability to move people around. And we're going to talk about Elliot Minchella later on. There's so much to say about him, but his work rate, his defence, you know, sometimes come off the hour, come off the man in terms of moving that kind of player into a position where we might be struggling a little bit.
I think that's a luxury Willie's got. He's got a whole host of players that can play in many, many different positions. Most, if we go back to the Tony Smith era, etc., Abdul was only ever played as a half. Now, fans have been saying that he could also play loose forward. He could also even, maybe even go slightly to the second row if need be. But it's never really, really happened. Then all of a sudden, Willie's realised that actually, you know what? By having Abdul on the bench, you, when you bring him on, you can either put him in the half, you can put him at loose, you can move Minchella to prop, Hadley into prop, Hadley can go to second row, Hadley can go to 13 if need be. He's got a whole host of players that can move around the pitch and slot into positions quite comfortably if a player needs a rest or a player is injured or you need to bring a player on just to maybe change the dynamic of the game. Getting a bit of game time into Abdul's legs is what's important at the moment. And he's been doing like a few 10-minute spells here and there, hasn't he? 10, 15-minute spells. But bringing him on either as a half or in the loose and then switching Mini to prop is... It's an abundance of riches, really, for Willie, isn't it? Because he knows his players. He can put, he can say, look, go and do a job there for 10 minutes and they'll do the job for him. You know, I don't think many other teams can have got that in the squad, but Rovers seem to have that, which is a fantastic place to be.
Yeah, and Steve, I think, I mean, it's clear for me, Abdul's not match fit yet. I think, you know, we can all see that. And I think that's probably why, well, not the only reason, but why Schneider and Lewis probably aren't under threat yet from Jordan Abdul, because he did 26 minutes against Salford. But he's having an impact in that time. He's on the pitch, which is crucial for us. Jesse Sue, he was another one. He did 20 minutes, 10 minutes either side of the half-time break. So we're nursing these players back and hopefully, you know, come the playoffs, it's going to benefit us. And like Scott said, now we've got that luxury of being able to do it. Why not? And credit to Willie Peters, Steve, because he looks like a head coach who knows what he's doing. So we come on the podcast and we think the lineup should be this and it should be that and we can't get our head around why he does things. He's very astute. And he has got a plan, and it's very welcomed, isn't it? Because for a long time, we've been sort of headless chickens at various stages of the season where it does feel Willie Peters and Rovers have been almost building to this moment this season.
It's about square pegs in square holes, isn't it? And Willie Peters does that. The number of times in the past where they've looked at coaches and thought, why are you playing this player here? Because, it is, you know, why is he on the wing when he's a centre? Why is he playing fullback when he's a halfback? I know that Mikey Lewis, by the way, I understand the position on Mikey, swapping between places. But Mikey is comfortable in that role at fullback. But the number of times, as I say, where we've had round pegs in square holes, And all that's gone now. We've got a full team to choose from, apart from Sam Wood, by the way. And so that's an absolute luxury that we've never, ever had for a long, long time, you know. And it's benefiting us. And going into the playoffs, we're full of confidence as well, you know. And it's, it all revolves around the coach. It revolves around the decisions the coach has made and the players buying into those decisions. And that's what makes us such a good club at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. There was 50 minutes, Scott, between Rovers' first try and the second try, Ryan Hall. There's no doubt that the yellow card for Salford did have an impact on the game. I thought they just lost a little bit of grunt. They lost a little bit in the middle, didn't they? And credit to Robbins, though. I mean, Ryan Hall talked so eloquently, didn't he, on Sky Sports after, if anybody's had the pleasure of watching him and just listening to his thoughts on the game and his analysis. And he's very astute. And he referenced that his try was a training ground move. I mean, it was a great flick on from Mikey Lewis, wasn't it? And there's probably only him in the side who would be able to do that and execute it so well. And I think there's only Ryan Hall who's probably able to get on the end of it and need the play. Great training ground move. And I did feel like once Ryan Hall slid in, that was pretty much the game, wasn't it?
Game was over by then, even though Schneider missed the kick. I mean, I never realised the kick had hit the post, actually, until I watched it back on Sky. I thought it had just gone wide, but it actually hit the post, didn't it? Yeah, even at 12-0, you never really saw Salford getting back into the game then. That was game, set, and match for me, Ryan Hall's try. As you say, great tip on for Mikey. To execute that with the under pressure from a tackle from a defending player as well is quite phenomenal. And if you want anybody to finish something like that with 20 yards to run into the corner, you want it to be Ryan Hall. I mean, I don't want to say it's like a simple try for him. It's not. He's still got to be finished. But if you want somebody to finish that tip on, you want Ryan Hall in that position. And afterwards on Sky, I mean, he's such an eloquent, knowledgeable, genuine bloke as well. He speaks so well, not only about the OKR, but about the game in general. And his insight into what he was saying was absolutely fantastic. And he's a role model, isn't he, Ryan, for any young kid coming through the game wanting to try and be whatever they can be in the game of rugby league. If you want to look up to anybody to be a role model, you look at Ryan Hall all day long.
Yeah, and Steve, I mean, he's a bit like Benjamin Button. He doesn't seem to be getting... you look at his stats, I mean, top try scorer, 13 tries. Top meter maker, 3,023 meters. He's made the most carries for the Robins. He's made the most tackle busts. He's made the most clean breaks. In the interview afterwards, Paul Cook asked him whether he'd be able to do one more pre-season. I felt sorry for Paul because I don't think the question came across how it was meant from him. And then Ryan Hall, what was really interesting for me, was almost saying, like, one more pre-season, you know, I could keep going. So it does open the door, doesn't it, to maybe this next season's not his last season. There could be more. And when you look at him, Steve, he's an absolute consummate professional. Physically, he's in really good shape. I think most importantly, Steve, Ryan Hall knows Ryan Hall. He knows what he needs to do to be match ready. He's almost probably telling Willie Peters, you know, the job that he does, how fit he is, and it must be a coach's dream.
Yeah, he put Cookie in his place, didn't he? He said, "Are you capping me or something?" Yeah. You know, it was brilliant that. Yeah, and you know, the other thing that came out of that conversation, Ryan Hall said, "We're not finished yet. Yeah. You know, we've achieved nothing."
Yeah.
Oh, was that? That might have been on Super League show. He said, "We've achieved nothing."
Yeah.
I think that came out from SKD as well. He said, you know, we're going into the playoffs confident. And, you know, so it just augurs well for going into the playoffs. Ryan Hall keeps himself fit. He looks after his body. And he enjoys his downtime as well. Apparently, I live not far from Garforth, and he was out the day after... one of the games, he was out giving prizes at a local fair, you know. And so he's part of a community. He looks after himself. He's the ultimate professional for me. And it shows on the field. By the way, the try, I love the way it came on the arc. If you look at it from behind the post, it comes... The timing was absolutely perfect. The timing of the flick-on. But the fact is, how many of those flick-ons do you see? And it goes behind the winger. Or it goes way in front of the winger. But Ryan Hall timed his run perfectly. And the flick-on, it was just a matter of getting it in the breadbasket and running those 20 yards. And that's good night, Salford.
Yeah, it was. And, I mean, Scott, we don't want to talk about negatives, do we? But, I mean, there's been a lot come out over the last few days about the crowd trouble incidents, etc., and we don't want to blow anything out of proportion, but it wasn't nice to see. I was studying the well. Every time I looked to my left, there seemed to be people arguing, people having a go. I don't think Rovers fans or the ones who were involved were any angels, but I think there was a large contingent of Salford fans there who, for whatever reason, congregated in the steps rather than go to the seats. And there just seemed to be a bit of a sinister element there. And, you know, we don't want to see it in any sport, let alone rugby league, do we? Any kind of antisocial behaviour or trouble like that. And Humberside Police made arrests on the night. They're now trying to find the Salford fan who's letting off flares, etc. It's just something we don't need in the game, is it, Scott?
You don't need it, no. And I think if we're being honest, every club has their element of, you know, a minority of people who are probably hell-bent at some point and causing a bit of bother. I don't want to diss Salford, but there's been many an occasion when Salford have turned up and there's been a bit of bother with Salford that he seems to follow him around a little bit, doesn't it? And I'm not saying that OKR are angels either. We've got our minority, as have all clubs. You're always going to get it, certainly in big matches as well. But, you know, what they realise is that that north stand there is predominantly a family stand as well. And it was full of kids as well, and they were throwing beer and all sorts. And do you know what? I don't condone it in the slightest. But if grown men want to argue with grown men, that's fair enough. But when there's a load of kids around and they're taking beer in the face and getting covered in ale and, you know, there's flares going off and what's it about? What's going on? You know, and I think my worry is that nowadays police don't seem to police sporting events anymore. It's all done by in-house stewards and security. And I just don't know whether those people, again, I don't want to generalize here, but I don't know whether they trained in crowd control or crowd trouble, or if it did absolutely fully kick off, would those stewards be in there sorting it out? I don't know what level they're trained to, or whether they're just there as don't stand there. Or they're just peacekeepers, you know. So I don't know, maybe at the bigger games, do we need a police element there? There always used to be a police element at matches years ago. And then all of a sudden, you never saw any police at matches. It's as though the stewards take control and they look after the situation. But I don't know whether the stewards, again, I say I'm not dissing the stewards. They're there to do a job, but I don't know how far advanced and trained they are. If it does kick off and there is a bit of violence in the crowd, I don't know what level they can take control of the situation. But regardless of that, you don't want to see it in the game, do you? You don't want to see kids getting covered in beer and ale and flares going off and stuff like that. But, you know, you're always going to get a minority in sport, unfortunately, at every club, but it needs kicking out of the game.
Yeah. I was going to say, Steve, sometimes there's a danger in the, if you shine a spotlight on something, you can make it bigger than what it actually is. But, I mean, you commented on the Facebook post, didn't you, Steve, about the stewarding at Rovers in general?
Yeah, I've seen it on the race courses as well. What you have three elements. First of all, you mentioned the police, Scott. Scott, the reason the police don't do it is because of the cost of policing. Yeah. They were charging the clubs an extraordinary amount of money to police games. And they're quite happy policing games outside. Once they get in the ground, they're charging the clubs. So what the clubs did, they looked at another way. And you've then got two things. You've got the stewards and you've got security. The people who you'll see standing around in high vis are basically stewards who are there for the safety of the crowd, not for sorting out any fighting. They're there if there's an emergency, if there was a fire or something like that. They're trained to direct the people in the right direction. They're not there. They're not paid enough. Blimey, I think they're on minimum wage. You know, they're not paid enough to go in fighting and pulling people out. It's security that's what they're for. And whether we had enough security, I don't know. But I used to work on the race courses all the time. And, you know, you could see the difference between security and stewards. And we've got stewards who did it, which, you know, they're not going to go wading in. And they've no right to, and why should they, on the money they're on? So that's the difference. And once we get that into our head, then, you know, we don't know. Why we don't have closed circuit TV on that section, on the away section, constantly, because that's what you get at football matches. You get a police box, and they're watching, or even security, they're watching the visiting fans or the known troublemakers among the home fans. And then they're moving swiftly. They'll say to a security guy, get that guy in the red shirt or get that guy in the black hoodie, you know, and they'll zoom in on him. That's what I think with certain matches we need to do.
Yeah, well, hopefully that's the end of that and we don't see any more incidences of antisocial behaviour or anything like that with the games that are still left to play. Wakefield up next on Friday night. Surprisingly, a sold-out Wakefield Stadium, although I do think it's going to be well over, at least, you know, there's going to a third of the stadium, or if not more, is going to be full of red and whites, which will be great to see. Scott, Wakefield relegated. They had a little bit of a lift, didn't they? But they never really seemed to carry it through. And when I look at that squad for Friday night, I mean, it's a very average squad at best. They're missing Whitbread and Proctor. I mean, of all the NRL signings to come across this season, I think Proctor's probably been one of the most underwhelming. He's just never got going, and his contribution, if you ask Wakefield fans, will be absolutely minimal. Rovers squad news, Reece Kennedy, he dropped out, Ryan Milne's come in. We've already talked about squad rotation and who might play and who might not. Are you expecting any major changes? Or do you think he'll go pretty much the same as Salford?
He'd probably go pretty much the same as Salford. With Reece Kennedy out, you might see Stoughton promoted back into the 17, maybe. But apart from that, I see it being the same. Unless he pulls a Caird ball, as we said, and he rests Matt Parcell this week, and he gives Jeslett an 80 minutes. It might do. I don't know. Maybe Jez will have some game time this week because he missed out last week. But I think it is just about squad rotation, really, and just getting minutes into players' legs. I think Abdul and Sue will do probably another 20, 25 minutes each this week as well. And it's just about getting through the game and hopefully, as Steve said earlier, winning the game handsomely to give us a chance of getting that home tie if we can. I think Wakefield will come at us. You know, I know they've not been great this season, but they don't want to go out on a massive heavy defeat, even though they're already relegated. They've got to turn up and show their fans that they're at least going to fight for the badge and fight for the shirt. So I don't think it'll be as easy as we think it is. I think we'll win. I think we'll win handsomely. But I don't think it's going to be as easy as we think it is. I think Wakefield will turn up and give us a game. I mean, they ran Catalans decent the other week, didn't they? 18-10 at Bellevue. So Catalan didn't have it all their own way there. But they have been poor all season, and we have far too much from on Friday night.
Yeah, Steve, there is a lot riding on the game, isn't there? Because, of course, the Robins still have the opportunity to finish fourth in the table, which would lead to a home playoff tie. In the playoffs. I mean, there's a lot of things that have got to go the Robins' way, isn't they? If you look at it, we're 2 points behind Lee. They're enjoying a 34-point cushion at the moment. Of course, though, they're playing the Wigan Warriors, who have got something else to play for, which is the League Leaders' Shield. St Helens, Wigan and Catalan all on 38 points. So it's in Wigan's interest as well to put a big score on Lee. Do you think 34 points, is that too big of a mountain to overcome, or do you think it's achievable?
I have a couple of friends, and one of them says it is, and one of them says it isn't. That's achievable. I say it's achievable. I think Rovers they need to soak up everything Wakefield throw at them early, complete the sets, and defend like they did against Salford. And, you know, from there on in, demoralise Wakefield. Like you say, I looked at the Wakefield squad and it's not brilliant. I think they could have done with Jai Whitbread playing. I think there's a couple of players there that Kershaw and who's the other one? Tangi Noah. They'll have a go. They'll have a dig. But just soak it up and then try and score the points. But I wouldn't kind of say, come on, lads, let's get 40 points if I was in the row. I'd just play the normal game. Wakefield aren't going to be like Salford were. And the points will come. And then, of course, you look at the other game, the Wigan Lee game. Wigan are an oil machine at the moment. They're outstanding. And Bevan French is calling the chum big time. He started his try-scoring run against us with that last-minute try. If you remember, that took us to Golden Point. You know, people like Niski, Bevan French, the whole team's it's a well-oiled team. And so I see them beating Lee. I think Lee are busted. I spoke to someone, a journalist who was at the game on last week, the Lee Wakefield game, and he said exactly the same. Lee were busted. I think we can turn those 34 points around.
What do you reckon, Scott? I mean, it's interesting you mentioned about Jez Litton. potentially replacing Matt Parr. So I think there's definitely merit in that. And I do wonder if Rowan Milnes comes into the squad, whether there's any move to rest potentially Lewis or Snyder. I mean, they're red hot at the moment. And you know, if you ask them, you know, would they want resting? The answer would be no. But we was in the same scenario with Jez Little, weren't we, last week? And you know, if Willie Peters is talking about getting players ready, John Abdul, Jesse Sue, for instance, and getting them game time, you'd imagine that Milnes would be another one who if needed, could slot into that half-back role, and whether he needs some game time. It's all ifs, buts and maybes, but, you know, whether he comes into the side and we see a half-back rested. I mean, what do you think that 30-point cushion, do you think that's achievable? And I suppose, if it is, you want as many ball players out there, don't you, to be able to chuck the ball around? Or do you go Willie Peters' way of just keep to the game plan and it'll happen regardless of changing so much?
Yeah, I mean, it may squad rotate a little bit just to get some minutes into players' legs, quite possibly. I don't think, regardless of whatever team Willie puts out on Friday, we're still going to have far too much for Wakey. Mm. When we're talking about a 34-point swing, you know, obviously that's not just 34 points that we score. We could beat Wakey by 16 points and Wigan could beat Lee by 18 points and that's enough. Yeah. You know, so we don't have to, we don't need to win by 40 points because Wigan could beat Lee by a handsome score and that also benefits us. So I think the swing of 34 points or whatever it is easily attainable. It really is. We just, if we can defend at Wakey like we defended against Salford and we can stick some points on the board, I'm sure that, as Steve said, I agree. I think Lee, it's probably going to be a couple of games too far for them the way they're going at the moment. They've had a great season. Nobody can ever knock that. Yeah, they've stayed injury-free and injury-clear, certainly through the spine and the predominant players of the team. But those players have nearly played every single game this season. And I think that they are probably just coming to the end of the gas in the tank. Mm. So I think Wigan will have, as Steve says, they're a well-oiled machine at the moment. They're going to be the team to beat. I think they'll stick in a few points on Lee, which means we might not have to do as much as we think we'd have to do at Wakey. But most importantly, we just go out and win the game. We play our game. We set ourselves up for the league. I know the old cliche, one game at a time, but you've got to be looking at that league game and the following week and building. And that building starts at Wakey on Friday. So, yeah, it might be a dead rubber to a certain extent, but we've got to go out there, win the game, and set ourselves up for Lee the following week.
Yeah, and Steve, I mean, it's pretty unique, isn't it, to have three sides all on the same points going into the final game of the season. And it is going to be a huge night for Wigan. I mean, we're going to have one eye on the pitch, one eye on our phones, I think, trying to and probably, if we had three eyes, we'd have one on the calculator as well, trying to work out the point swing. But it's going to be a really interesting night. For Super League, great. I think we need nights like this. I know people are frustrated that the games that being played different times so they can watch it. But really, for the competition, you need to be kicking off at the same time. And it's going to be interesting to see what happens.
I think Sky should have utilised the red button for the whole lot so that you can pick your game.
Well, I think Jenna Brooks said when she was on the podcast a couple of weeks ago that they're going to be doing some kind of studio thing where there's going to have eyes, people watching different games, and whether that's going to be, and they'll pan back to that. And it's going to be interesting as well to see what they do with the trophy. If you remember famously, what was it, 2015, when they had the helicopter in flying round? I mean, I don't know if the RFL Super League coffers will stretch to a helicopter this time. Maybe it might be a skateboard and something like that, but
they are doing the helicopter. It's going to be started. There's a hotel in Worsley in Manchester and it's going to be parked there and they're going to be watching the game from there, and as soon as they know where it's going, it's only a few miles, isn't it? Can I just go back to something about Milnes being in the squad? Could you see Mikey Lewis going fullback on Friday night?
Do you know what, mate? Maybe, because we've seen Willie Peters, but I don't see any merit in resting Jack. I think your back line, they're looking well-oiled.
It's not necessarily for Friday night, it's for the future. Again, just keep Mikey, put him fullback, give Milnes a game. And then when it comes to the playoffs, if we need to resort to make it, it's back in that position again. I don't know. I mean, it's just something that went through my mind. But yeah, going back to the situation in the league, I think it'll stay as it is. Other than St. Helens might have a field day and score a lot of points.
I'm hoping for a cricket score, Steve. I'm hoping for a cricket score. I think they'll come into bat and they'll do very well.
They'll be going for it, won't they? They'll be going for it. And the way, I'm not going to comment on the other side. But,
no, don't give them the airtime because it's not worth commenting on. Three players in the team of the week after the victory over Salford: Brad Schneider, Elliot Minchella, James Batchelor, three pivotal players. Great to see them getting recognition. And there's more recognition dished out to Elliot Minchella earlier on in the week when the end of season. Well, it's not the end of season, is it? But the Player of the Year awards took place. Scott, you was there. A good night had by all.
Yeah, brilliant night. Really, really good night. It was all set off very, very quickly. Obviously, with, I don't know whether you're going to touch on this, Jono, but obviously Edge and Keith getting the lifetime memberships of OKR, more than deserved. Two brilliant men who've done so much for Kingston Rovers over the years. And I said last week, you know, without them two fellas, there wouldn't be a whole KR. And then Paul Sewell got up and gave his speech, which was absolutely rousing. What a speech that was. Absolutely brilliant. Just to say, you know, we haven't even started yet. We're ahead of where we want to be. We're already ahead of where we expected to be. We're all excited now. What's the future going to bring? You know, he's so positive, and that this club is, we aren't far away from winning silverware, from winning trophies, and it's not going to be for the want of trying. It was a brilliant night, very well organised. The Doubletree Hilton was packed to the rafters with, you know, Rovers fans, sponsors, guests, family. All the players were there with their partners. It was absolutely a brilliant, brilliant night, really well organised. Neil Rudd led the night, as he always does. And then, obviously, John Wells and Janet Brooks took over in the awards ceremony. And it was brilliant. And all the awards, I think, dished out were very, very worthy winners, without a doubt.
Yeah, and if anyone is wondering what the No Arseholes means, which is what I've been banding about on social media, first of all, it started off with Paul Sullivan mentioning an encounter with Matty Staughton when they was down in the south of France for the Catalan game. Paul Sewell spotted Matty Staughton in the swimming pool and thought he'd go introduce himself. And he asked Matty, what's great? What was it, Scott? What's great about being at Rovers and what's so good?
Yeah.
Two words, no arseholes. And that became a bit of a running joke throughout the award ceremony. And then at the end, when Elliot Minchella received his trophy as well, Jenna Brooks mentioned, I think he was posed the same question to Minchella about what makes a squad so good and the team spirit. Elliot Minchella touched on that, and he said, Jenna Brooks said, no arseholes. And then Minchella said, oh, dickheads either. So that was that's where that phrase has come from. And it's quite a nice one to coin, isn't it, Steve? Because it does show the unity within the side, but not just in the side, the playing side, the whole club at the moment.
Yeah, that's going to be with us for a long, long time, that phrase. Thanks to you, Jono, as well. You know, have you designed a T-shirt yet?
Well, I don't think the club will be. I don't think the club will be bringing that out in their official merchandise range, whether the podcast or not. We'll see how we get on. Maybe at the end of the season.
I miss part of Paul Sewell's speech purely because the stream went down, the audio on the stream went down. So he was getting to, I was looking forward to every word he was saying, and then I think he got onto James McNichol, and then suddenly you couldn't hear anything. Sat in my home in Leeds, but everything's positive. I don't think I got right. Here we go. Here's the weekly. Let's look back, Jono. I go back to 86. I'm more professional then, but we're so much more professional. We've got to be, in a sense, the times we live in, but we've got it right. And going back to last year when Mr. Smith gave us the ump, got the ump and disappeared, that was the best. We all talk about what Tony Smith's done for the club. That was the best thing he ever did for the club, was getting the ump and disappearing, because without that, we might have still been stuck with him. and we may not have heard of Willie Peters, but when he did that and the club moved in for Willie Peters, who'd have thought that that was the beginning of what we could achieve by the end of this season? You know,
yeah,
amazing.
Well, we certainly all know Willie Peters is now. If we go through the trophy winners, Women's Player of the Year, Lois Brown, I mean, she's a bit of a... she's been around the side for a long time, very much in the mould of Sean Kenny Dow, leads by example, deserved recipient of that award. And just as a mention to the women's side as well, Scott, because they're, I think, currently top of their league. Midway through the season, they found out that they wouldn't be able to get promoted. I think there's a structural change, isn't there, with the Women's Super League, etc. So, you know, they've had to carry that burden of disappointment that if they did win the league or and they won the playoffs, that they wouldn't get promoted. But they're very handily placed this season and definitely good building blocks going into to next season when they will be able to gain promotion. And they have done a fantastic job. Ben there, the head coach, the girls can't speak any more highly of him. And it's great to see them sharing a platform with the men's side, and hopefully we're going to in the future we'll see the PDRL side and the LDRL side and the whole club being up on stage as well.
Yeah, it was fantastic. All the girls were there on Friday night, and Ben Parker was there as well, and Lois's award was richly deserved. I mean, she got upstage and accepted it, and she said, you know, and she actually admitted herself, I'm an old head now, I'm coming to the end of my career, you know, but very well, well deserved. And Lois has been a great leader of that team as well, certainly one of the leaders as well of that team. There's a lot of young girls in that team as well, you know, so we've got big futures ahead of them. They've done so well. I think were they challenging on three counts or something? They'd already won one trophy, hadn't they? And they were top of the league.
Was it the league trophy, the League Cup?
The League Cup, yeah, but I think I might be wrong. Don't quote me on this, but I think that when Ben Parker gave his speech, it was obviously pre-recorded for Friday night, and I think the second of the three challenges has also been completed as well. So they might be champions now as well, without even playing. I'm not sure, because a result might have gone in their way, yeah, where they've actually become champions, but they didn't know that on Ben's speech prior to Friday night. So I think they've completed two of the three challenges that they set themselves this season. One of them would have been promotion, of course, but due to the system and the changes, there's no promotion this season, I think, which is disappointing for the girls because they've done so, so well. You know, so yeah, they've been absolutely fantastic, haven't they? I've seen a couple of the games that they've played as well, been down two or three times, and they're certainly the ethos that runs through the girls' teams is the same that runs through the men's team. You know, they're absolutely born winners, and to be top of the league and League Cup winners, you know, there's clearly a decent side there to build on for the girls.
Yeah, a couple more awards. Lenny Ellis, he was named the Academy Player of the Season, and Louis Gorman, he was named the Huggingston Rovers Young Player of the Season. I mean, two fantastic players there, Scott. They've got a huge future ahead of them, and obviously they're in the first team fold at the moment, and they're getting exposed to training with the men's senior side. What impressed me most, Scott, was about how well-spoken they are, and it looks like Jason Everton and the rest of the academy staff are giving them fantastic groundings, not just in terms of their ability to perform on the pitch, but in terms of just being good young men and the way they present themselves. And for two guys to get up on stage and speak in front of people, it's not easy. And they came across so well. And they're, you know, really good ambassadors for the club. And two players, Scott, we hope, you know, will bear fruition into the first team. And we'll get to see them in the red and white of Huggingston Rovers for a long time to come.
Yeah, of course. I mean, they're the future of the club at the end of the day. I think we need to throw Leo Tennyson in there as well to give him a shout, because he's in the first team squad as well at the moment. And you've also got people like Connor Barley and players like that as well. So there are a few kids coming through the system at Rovers. But you're right, when they got up on stage and they spoke, it was absolutely fantastic. And both of them said, Lenny and Louis both said, how great it is to have, you know, Louis in particular, when he said, you know, to learn off people like Tom Opachick and Sean Kenny Dowell is some of the best coaching you can ever have. And obviously, the leadership of Jason Netherton with those young kids is absolutely outstanding. You can see that the lads look up to him. Jason was a consummate professional in himself when he played for Rovers. Obviously, he started his career at Leeds Rhinos, didn't he? But when he came to Rovers and being a whole lad, Jason is a consummate professional. And he will make sure that these kids are ready for any future that they might have, i.e. in the first team or wherever the career takes them. But yeah, Louis and Lenny spoke brilliantly on Friday night, really. And if those are just two of these shining lights for the future, well, the future looks bright, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And Steve, I mean, Scott just mentioned Sean Kenny-Dowell. He was awarded the Colin Hudson Outstanding Achievement Award. I mean, some people were tipping him for the Roger Millwood, the top trophy. But Sean Kenny-Dowell, he definitely deserves recognition, doesn't he? Not only for his contribution to Hulkington Rovers, but for his contribution to rugby league in general, but especially this season. I mean, he's really come to the fore, and his leadership skills, his performances warrant recognition.
Absolutely. The Colin Hutton Award isn't awarded every year. So it's a special award that is a reward for extraordinary stuff. And Sean Kenny-Dowell's been extraordinary. And I followed the Australian game as well, and I noticed that the guys at the Roosters, they're taking a great interest in the retirement, if you like, of Sean Kenny-Dowell. And all of those are saying that it's fully deserved. And there isn't a player in the game that I look at him and I think, people say, why is he retiring? He's retiring because he wants to go out on top, you know, leave him wanting more. But he's just as powerful now as when he first came. In fact, he's more powerful now than when he first came. And when you see him striding out, I think it was the semi-final again where he got that intercept and he went, you know, they wouldn't have seen him back in the day. But he still made 40, 50 yards. And that long striding, laconic in a way, stride of his, it's outstanding. But it's what he does elsewhere. It's the defence. It's also when the high ball goes up, you're backing 99 times out of 100 to pat that ball back, and there'll be Ryan Hall and Mikey Lewis behind him waiting for that ball to come back. Against Salford, I think he patted it forward this time. He gave them a chance, but that's that 1 in 100 that he doesn't get it right. And he gets most of everything he does right. But then if we find ourselves conceding a try or if something goes wrong, he's there amongst the players saying, right, lads, calm down, let's do better next time. And absolute total influence. Can I go back to, we'll talk about the young kids. I watched part of the A-team game, the reserve game against Leeds. Connor Barley, what a giant he's becoming. You know, and I agree with everything you said about the lads taking the award, how articulate they are. Every one of them, they've obviously had media training somewhere along the line because they were so articulate, so well-spoken. But talking about just one thing I noticed, how huge Connor Barley's becoming. And that augurs well for the future as well.
Yeah, definitely. Sam Luckley, he was awarded the Hull KR Foundation Community Player of the Season. That was in honour of his extra contribution to the community work that players are invited to do and going the extra mile. And Scotty gave a very entertaining speech as well. Mikey Lewis, he got the tackle of the season for his try-saving effort against Castleford. Ryan Hall, he got try of the season for that full-length try. I think it was against Huddersfield. When he scored I mean, fantastic to see him burning down the wing there. And then the two big awards, which is probably the ones that mean most to the players, is the Player of the Season award. Elliot Minchella received it. And then, sorry, prior to that, Sean Kenny-Dowell, he received also the Members Player of the Year, which was voted upon by pass holders. So again, great recognition for him. But the two big trophies were the Players Player and the Roger Millwood Player of the Year Award. And they both went to Elliot Minchella, Scott. I mean, in terms of consistency, in terms of levels of performance, in terms of leadership as well, of course, vice-captain, he's a player who's really starting to peak in terms of his career. And he's a player who's not necessarily had it easy as well. Of course, he was let go by Leeds, made his Super League debut with them. He was let go by them after him and Zach Hardacre got admitted assault and a student. He then had to go into the semi-pro game, played with Sheffield, played with Bradford. It was at Bradford he really came to the fore, I think. He had a fantastic stint there. and then the Robins picked him up, didn't they? £100,000 for him and four other players. And I think it's probably one of the best bits of transfer business we've done for a very long time. And you only have to see the player he is now and how that different route almost to getting a second chance at Super League Rugby has benefited him. And we're now ultimately getting the benefit of that. And Elliot Minchella, I mean, wow, deserving of them both awards. And I think the player one is one that will really, really please him.
Yeah, without a doubt, the player's player. When you get voted for by your peers as being the best, you know, player in the squad over the season, you can't get any higher recognition of that, can you? When all your fellow players are voting for you. It was mentioned on the stage of the night that obviously they'd mentioned to the other players and the players player of the year, Ryan Hall and Sean Kenny Dowell, who came second and third. They said, who did you vote for? And they both said Minnie. So I'm presuming that most of the squad probably voted for Minichella, I'm guessing. Consummate professional again, as you say, he's been given a second chance, really. He had that awful ACL injury as well a couple of seasons ago, which is not necessarily always easy an injury to come back from. But he's come back an absolute outstanding player. And not just because he's a Rovers player. If Sean Wynne don't pick him for the England squad against Tonga, well, I don't know. I will ever get another chance, you know, because for me, he's the best 13 in the UK. He really is. He's got everything. You know, he's got the grunt, he's got the ball handling skills, he's got the defensive skills, he'll take the line on. He's just an outstanding 13, is Minnie. And every award that he received the other night was thoroughly, thoroughly warranted and deserved.
Yeah, Steve, Roger Millwood, player of the season. I mean, you only have to look at some of the other winners to see the magnitude of it. Harry Poole, Arthur Bunting, Frank Foster, Roger Millwood, Roy Holdstock, Mike Smith, Mark Broadhurst, Gary Prom, Gavin Miller, George Fairbairn, Wayne Parker, Anthony Sullivan, Paul Fletcher, Michael Dobson, Josh Hodgson, Danny Maguire. I mean, the list is endless. And Elliot Minchella, rightly, stands shoulder to shoulder with them now.
You know, all those names you've just mentioned, I saw every one of them play. And I saw them play regularly. And Minchella's definitely up there, the best of them. He really is. You know, back in the day, this was the award that everybody looked forward to at the end of the season. Who's got the player, you know, player of the year award. And I saw every one of them. And Elliot Minchella matches every one of them as well. You know, he beats some of them. Beat some of them for me, and he's such a nice kid as well. You know, I live in Leeds, and I listen to him talking about Cameron Smith, and I just smile. You know, Cameron Smith's a good player. I'm not knocking him as a player, but to me, he's not a patch on Elliot. You know, and the Saints fans have got their favourites, and the Warrington fans have got their favourites, but I agree with Scott. You know, he's got to be in the market for the loose forward spot against Tonga.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see the Super League Dream Team picks as well. I think maybe, you know, John Asiati seems to be the favourite for that at the moment. So whether Minchella will miss out, I think Rovers have still got a few candidates who could make the way into that side. Tom Opacik, Sean Kenny Dowell, James Batchelor, players who have really... I mean, Tom Opacik, wow. He almost gets forgot about, doesn't he? Because he's just such an unassuming guy. He goes about his work. He's not necessarily the one who's running 50, 60, 70 metres, but he's the one who's scrambling in defence and he goes about his business so well. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what happens with them. Scott, I'm holding my mind about Player of the Season awards and when they're held before the end of the season, but it felt like it was a rousing night in terms of, you know, the club, the players. It gives them that, I don't know, that lift going into the playoffs and almost a bit of a battle cry. Whereas sometimes when they're held, you know, before the end of the season, it's more of a damp squib. But this felt like the right time to do it. And I'm sure the players will have come away probably on cloud nine after it. And but even more focused to get the job done.
Yeah, of course.
Can I just, honestly, just going back to the player, to Elliot winning, you wouldn't have begrudged any of six players winning that trophy. You know, let's have a look at Opacik. Let's have a look at Batchelor. You know, Matt Parcell, Jez Litton, Mikey Lewis. You know, and they never finished it. They never finished in the first three. You wouldn't begrudge any of six or seven players winning that. Sorry, I interrupted.
Yeah, a rousing night. Scott. A rousing night.
Yeah, and just to add to that, Steve, it was nice to see that Dean Hadley came third as well. Yeah. Absolutely fantastic that Dino got some recognition, because he's been absolutely an absolute stalwart all season, doing all that grunt and hard work in the middle. But yeah, a fantastic night. I've never been one to understand why they would hold awards ceremonies before the season ends. It's always been a bit odd to me. I'd always think that you should see where the final game is, wherever that is, whether you met the playoffs or it's the last game of the season, then you do an awards ceremony, because something could happen in the playoffs that makes somebody else, you know, that player of the season or the player's player or whatever it might, try of the season, whatever it might be. But you're right, it did seem right the other night. And the aura of the club is something that I've not witnessed. Probably the last time I witnessed this was probably when I was a young kid in the 1980s, when we had that great team and back-to-back championships and things like that. That's the last time I felt this sort of aura around the club. And everybody who's part of the club are all on the same hymn sheet. Yeah. And everybody 100% believes that this club is going places. Yeah. And if everybody unites, if everybody comes together, I think Paul Sewell said in his speech, whether you're on the board, whether you're sponsors, whether you're players, whether you're backroom staff, coaches and your fans, if you all come together as one, you can achieve so much. And I think that's where Rovers are going now. And Friday night was the epitome of that. The unity in that room on Friday night was phenomenal. The atmosphere was absolutely brilliant. And it's a club that is without doubt going places. As Paul Sewell said, we're a little bit ahead of schedule, but so be it. Yeah. If we're ahead of schedule and so be it. You know, let's see where this journey takes us.
I think it was Tuesday night, Scott.
I keep thinking, of course it was. I was there. It was Tuesday, yeah. I was even there.
I keep thinking
Friday night with Wakey, obviously.
Time flies when you're following the Robins. Anyone who listened to last week's podcast will know that was waxing lyrical about Jimmy Kynos being so young. I think we said he was 28. Of course, he's 32. So another one to add to the bloopers reel there. Thanks to Phil Barrett, who I know is listening. He pointed that out to us. Another one for the bloopers reel. And if you are travelling to the game to watch the Robins against Wakefield, there's a little junior festival going on. Beverly Braves under sevens are playing out on the pitch. So keep an eye out for them. They'll be there cheering on the red and whites. That is it. That's the end of the podcast. Hopefully, when we come to you next week, we're talking about Hull Kingston Rovers having a home playoff tie against the Lee Leopards. And we see another evening of fantastic rugby league. A huge thanks to Scott and to Steve for joining me. This is the Red Run Podcast Weekly, powered by Budget Tires Auto Centre. For now, live, love, laugh, and be happy.